Welcome back to the Reverse Autoimmune Disease Summit series, everybody. This is, of course, the autoimmune brain, and I'm talking to Dr. Anna Kabeca about putting out the fire in your brain through proper hormone regulation. So Dr. Kabeca is an internationally acclaimed menopause and sexual health expert, a global speaker, pioneering promoter of women's health, and just a really dear friend and colleague of mine. She's Emory University trained and triple board certified in gynecology and obstetrics, integrative medicine, and anti-aging and regenerative medicine, and is the author of The Hormone Fix, a diet and holistic lifestyle program for menopausal women, and her new book, Keto Green 16, which launched May of this year. Her areas of specialty include bioidentical hormone treatments, natural hormone balancing strategies, and she's received extensive acclaim for her transformational programs, including Women's Restorative Health, Sexual CPR, and Magic Menopause. She's also the creator of Jolva and Mighty Maca. So Jolva, of course, is a vulvar cream for women, and Mighty Maca is a top-selling rejuvenating alkaline superfoods drink. She's also the, you started a podcast, Couch Talk, compelling podcast.
The Girlfriend Doctor podcast.
Okay, I love it. So welcome to the series, Dr. Anna.
Thank you, Keisha. Thanks for having me here.
So you're in a silent retreat right now, so I appreciate you coming out to talk to us right now.
Only for you, Keisha.
I just really appreciate that. I always ask my experts on this particular series, what comes to mind when you hear the phrase, the autoimmune brain?
I just think it's self, like on self-destruct. I think the autoimmune brain is that self-destructing. And it's a really big challenge.
Yeah. Self-destruction is a good way of putting it because it's happening on so many different levels. And what is the role that hormones play in the regulation of the immune system when we're talking about really either hitting the red button for self-destruct or having collaboration between all systems in the body and the mind and the spirit?
Hormones are such amazing molecules, right? We've called them chemical messengers, but they're so much more. They're energetic molecules that are communicating in so many ways internally and externally in our body. That's why it's so hard to measure them. And what's happening, and I think too, especially in the time of transition of life, this period between age 35 and 55, we enter this neuroendocrine vulnerability time period, right? We're experiencing neurologic symptoms as well as endocrine or hormonal symptoms at the same time. So there's a tremendous interrelationship here. And when we're thinking about, our hormones and what a powerful role they play on our immune system, we think even just the way we're designed, right, in pregnancy, progesterone to really damper any autoimmune reaction that could, or cross immunity reaction that can occur between mother and baby in pregnancy. I mean, progesterone and estrogen all affect and support immunity. They do support immunity. And so that's why it's important to keep balance and to honor our hormonal transition and our design during this time period, especially during this window and beyond.
You know, it's interesting because this is also true for men, but it's not got as many labels to it. You know, women have a lot of labels that are applied to the different hormonal shifts that will happen for them, but from pre-puberty to pubescent to PMS to perimenopause, premenopause, menopause, postmenopause, right? We have all these P's in there.
And so true.
You know, we have all kinds of labels. And men also have this, they go through puberty also. They have this influx and rush of hormones, and then they go through andropause also. And so why is it that in our culture, women have gotten so much attention around the cyclical variations of our moods and men seem to not have had quite as much?
Oh my gosh. I think it's because men have 10 times as much testosterone as women, and testosterone's a great stabilizer. honestly, and testosterone converts to estrogen, and it is a anabolic hormone working to build them up. We're more like, honestly, fragile on that level, right? We don't have as much testosterone, 10 times less testosterone. So I think that adds for this, you know, fluctuations to be more extreme in women. We rely on our ovarian cyclical production of hormones. That's how we're designed. Men, so much on their testes, but a really big part of their adrenals. And they tend to handle stress, you know, I mean, as a rule, most men tend to design to handle stress better, again, with more testosterone on the outside. Now that is changing, I think, mm-hmm. but in general, that's by design.
Yeah. We're seeing sperm motility and count reduced dramatically in men now in industrialized countries since the 1970s. It's really been awful to witness. But that being said, the part about men being innately designed to handle stress better than women, one of the things I'll often say from stages is, you know, women of our era are trying to bring home the bacon, fry it up in a pan, and look hot at the same time, and that we're actually not designed to sustain that level of expectation we put on ourselves. No one else is doing this to us, you know? And so when I look at women that have come to me with autoimmune disease, that is one of the very first things I'm looking for, is I'm looking at their genetic patterns for how they are genetically wired for handling stress. And then I'm looking at what's real, the boots on the ground, so to speak, of where their adrenals, their thyroid, their hormones are in terms of blood sugar balance, as well as reproductive hormones. And that seems like just ABCs, right? Foundational building block of really where you start with women. What's your opinion about, in the functional medicine world, I see a lot of very aggressive, like heavy metal chelation. And, you know, which I agree with. I do it myself. I'm board certified in heavy metal chelation. But I always look first to see if the body can handle it, right? How are those adrenals and hormones?
Right. That's so true. You know, again, how can we handle, what's the first step that we need to do to prepare for safe heavy metal chelation? Yeah. Because it's, you know, the brain's wide open for that. And mm-hmm. it will be under assault when we're chelating heavy metals if we haven't improved our detox pathways first, and we're not supporting ourselves in other ways, like infrared sauna, you know, and, mm-hmm. you know, and antioxidants during this heavy metal chelation as well.
Well, and now the latest, I think, of people being very, very aggressive with is mold, right? And again, kind of going in there and doing these heavy duty mold detoxification protocols while also ignoring the same thing, right? Like, let's look, how are your adrenals? How are your hormones? Because these are those foundational, oh, I feel safe, right? Your body's immune system can kind of downregulate and go, okay, we've got this, right? And then move from there and making sure, or, you know, all organs of detoxification are open and ready to release whatever you stir up.
Yeah, no, that's so true. And I think it's, you know, again, the neuroprotective ability of our hormones, again, with progesterone being so neuroprotective, that making sure for both men and women that we've optimized progesterone. Mm-hmm. When appropriate too.
So your latest book is Keto.
Keto Green 16. Yes.
Yes. The Keto Green 16. And so let's talk about ketogenesis and what that has to do with hormone regulation, immune system, and the protection for a woman going through menopause and getting that fire down in the brain.
Well, I think the really big thing that was such an aha moment for me is that when I was going through this like downward perimenopausal cycle when I was 48, I had so much brain fog, you know, and so much memory loss. And that was really devastating to me. I've relied on my memory. My memory was great, right? So to not remember things was really challenging, not to mention the weight gain, the irritability, the mood swings, and all that other things that I was experiencing. But so as I switched into this keto green way of living that I discovered, because going keto wasn't enough, I hit a wall. the alkalinity or the alkalinizing component to manage cortisol and to give my body the micronutrients it needs to support my hormones on a cellular level was critical. So hence the alkaline part or the green part to my keto plan. So that's why it's keto green. But that gave me such clarity and my memory back, and I can string two sentences together again. How wonderful. And I also had the peace, this peace that surpasses all understanding. I was the eye of the storm. I was the calm, and nothing in my external circumstances had changed. I was still a single mom, two teenage daughters, a wee one in elementary school, and near broke at that time. So there was a lot of havoc going on, but yet I felt this peace and calm. And I was like, okay, it was so enlightening for me and so profound. That's why I've written my books and created my programs to share this, but then to realize what was happening in my brain. And this is what I didn't know till after the fact. So when we're in this time period, age 35 to 55, according to research, looking at this time period of neuroendocrine vulnerability, we talk about estrogen, this estrogen window, but really this brain's ability to use glucose for fuel. So our brain's fuel source is estrogen dependent. Progesterone plays a big role too. We're not really sure how it plays a role, but this decrease in the brain's ability to use glucose for fuel follows along our known progesterone decline from decline of ovarian function, and add in adrenal stress in our 40s and 50s, right? And then progesterone levels decline and estrogen declines with it. And so the brain is starving for fuel. This makes it vulnerable to attack, right? And this makes you feel that brain fog, right? If you're not getting nourishment, you have this brain fog, and insulin resistance compounds that. So this concept, if you're pre-diabetic or diabetic, or you've been snacking and getting insulin resistant for your entire life, that just compounds this phenomenon. So your brain's starving for fuel, but switching to ketones for fuel is not hormone dependent, does not appear to be hormone dependent. So all of a sudden your brain's like, wow, okay, the lights are turned on again. The clouds have lifted. I'm feeling so much like I'm making two sentences perfectly together now. Wow. Isn't this great? And, and the list goes on. And for me, it was just this, a profound experience. And I didn't know the science till a couple of years later, where I read a research article looking at gluconeogenesis in the brain and the role of estrogen in this fact. And so it just was that aha moment. Wow. That just makes perfect sense. My brain was starving for fuel. And even with our hormones dialed in, I still had to shift the fuel source. So to shift to a more of a ketogenic style of living, but to do it in the right way, to do it, with balancing my micronutrients, to balancing my stress, balancing my lifestyle, all these factors. And that's what's really profound. So I really want women to know that, like, to douse this fire, we actually have to have healthy fats, high quality protein, low carbs, and with the carbs we're eating, let them be dark green leafies as much as possible, right? And herbs, micro herbs, and shift and break up with sugar, because sugar is like pouring fuel on a fire of inflammation in our brain. And that insulin resistance creates that additional propensity to have dementia and Alzheimer's further on down the road as well. So what we can do at any time of our life, but just shifting into this ketosis to use ketones for fuel, for brain fuel, is profoundly, profoundly beneficial.
So why don't you explain insulin resistance for any of our listeners who are joining us that are like, what is that? I've heard it, but I don't know what it is.
Yeah. So I like to explain it this way. So if you've ever been like at consider when our body releases glucose, when we eat a meal, you get this, and there's carbohydrates. Say you're eating some fruit, a fruit salad, and your body is inundated with this fructose, the sugar. Well, that goes into your bloodstream as glucose, and your insulin's going to come in and say, okay, I'm going to, store you for later when I need you, like when you're running a marathon or whatever else you're doing. So I'm going to store you for later. And so what happens over time is the more glucose that we're eating during the day, our insulin has to keep coming in to try to get it, to store it, to handle it, to manage glucose. And this is where snacking is really...
To store what we don't need and use what we do need. So there's like this little, okay, this is an excess, so you need to go over here and this you can use, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And so what happens oftentimes with snacking is like we eat and glucose comes into our system, insulin comes in, and then glucose never even goes completely down to baseline. We're eating again with a snack and then we need more insulin. So what happens, it's the glucose, our receptors become resistant to insulin, to the effect of insulin. We need more and more insulin to do the same thing it was doing when we were in our fasting state to manage glucose.
And their storage receptors become overloaded. So you now have spilled over glucose in your system, which then gets converted to fat.
Yes. Absolutely. And that's the insulin resistance. I always think of it, you know, like when you have a begging dog at the table and you get just ignore it, that's like insulin and, you know, glucose at the table. So, you know, just you stop, the body stops hearing or stops responding to that insulin. Mm-hmm. And that's where it's devastating, because insulin keeps going up and then glucose can keep going up as well. And we know that insulin resistance is a significant reason for inflammatory disorders in our body, as well as autoimmune disorders, as well as diabetes.
And weight gain.
And so weight gain, fat gain, brain
right.
fog.
And so that liver becomes very, very congested, which is the place that you are trying to filter, by the way, unknowingly behind the scenes, without you even knowing. This beautiful liver is constantly trying to filter out all these estrogen mimicking chemicals, right? Estrogen disrupting chemicals that are in our environment these days. And so when you put something in your mouth that's actually overloading it, then it can't keep up with what we're already exposed to in a very contaminated environment. So that's why more and more people are having so many issues these days. It's not like this is new. It's just that we have this buildup on the outside of us that our human body hasn't been really designed to filter this kind of toxicity.
So true. So true. And our liver is like the first pass metabolism, right? First pass metabolism for our own bioidentical hormones. And when it's overloaded with these endocrine disruptors, we get a problem, a hormone imbalance as a result of this too.
Yeah. I always say the liver really doesn't like hormones. It doesn't like them. It tolerates them.
That's what it has to do. It just wants to filter them. You know, you're coming
That's
in,
right.
get out. It's the get unwelcome out. Neighbor. Yeah. So true, Keisha. So true. I think of the liver, you know, and in practice, when patients would come in to see me with hormone imbalance symptoms, what first thing I did was detox their liver, right?
Me too.
Give them liver support, detox the liver, support their gut health, give them a modified elimination diet, and in 6 weeks, they'd come back feeling for their lab results at that time. That's how I did it. And they'd feel tremendously better, tremendously better.
And a good clue that this is required for you, you know, that your body's screaming for that very intervention that Dr. Kabeka was just talking about, is if you start on some sort of bioidentical, like a progesterone cream, and you gain weight, right? Then you've just met your liver's resistance to you. It's like, it's saying, we're not doing extra. I can't keep up with that. It's already happening out here, right?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And stress would be out of control. Mm-hmm. That would be shunting that progesterone to cortisol to kind of fill your tanks back up, especially if you've been burnt out. And that can be a really big issue. So oftentimes for those clients, it's starting with a trans, you know, really building up your adrenals always first.
Right.
So working on our adrenal protocols and then supporting, you know, a little bit of progesterone. Sometimes I'll use it in the day there in the morning when needed, and then eventually shift as we heal the adrenals.
So I appreciate you explaining the whys and wherefores of the anatomy and physiology of this. And I'd like to return back to ketones and what's going on with ketogenic diets were initially formulated to help with like reduction of seizures and neurological issues, right? Brain on fire issues, which is exactly what we're talking about. And so how is it that they've made their way into mainstream now?
Well, I think that's really good because we needed to break up with sugar. We needed to do it healthfully. That's number one. And we, you know, especially recognizing that we think better, we're clearer when we're using ketones for brain fuel. It makes a difference. It makes a huge difference. One of the reasons I'm at this retreat, the Silent St. Ignatian retreat, is also to fast and, you know, really get spiritually connected and clear and wide open, as wide open as I can with my brain and spirituality and heart, right? To connect the two together as much as possible. And these practices help us. And certainly the physiology behind it is that we're producing ketones at the same time. And that's really powerful in removing the distractions of otherwise everyday life and how important that is. It's important for our bodies to have that time to rest too. So ketones, became aware of ketogenic diets early on because I have a daughter with seizure disorder. So I learned about the benefits of ketogenic diets for that. And it's very hard to implement in young adults. It's very hard. And that's a challenge. I also implemented it for some of my patients with neurologic disorders, as well as the ones with candida, with yeast overgrowth. And so I recognized quickly that it's very challenging in the perimenopausal age range. And, you know, to figure out why that was, I think it's very acidifying diet is for women. Again, men have 10 times as much testosterone, but a ketogenic diet is very acidifying. And that's why we need to balance that through lifestyle and nutrients to really support us in this process and that we can use ketones. Now, I typically say 10% fasting, 80% keto green, and 10% feasting. I want that metabolic flexibility. So there's times that you do carb up, your carb up day. And as you get, you know, as you play with this, you'll find out what you can carb up on and what you can't. And that's pretty fascinating too. And certain things will ignite that fire more. Alcohol, especially as we're getting older, you know, can really be, it's so inflammatory to so many of us. And that's a challenge because we want to stress relieve with a glass of wine. We hear a glass of wine's good for us, you know, and all
let's
of
just things. Put that myth to bed right here.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is not good for you.
Well, and no alcohol is.
Any
right?
circumstances. Yeah. Well, caffeine isn't either. No. You know, when we talk about good for you, you know, and nutritious, nourishing, caffeine is acidifying, right?
It's acidifying. So it's about that ability to balance it too, you know, and if you can't balance it, if it's a daily habit, then that has to change. You have to take these fasts from it and see how you do without it. And it's pretty amazing. Like, you know, I always tell, and I wrote about this in my book, Keto Green 16, that I was wearing continuous glucose monitoring. And I found out that the mornings I would drink my coffee, you know, feet hit the floor running, drink my black coffee, nothing in it, my blood sugar would go up 20 to 30 points.
And that's stop right there. Just rest with that for a second, everybody. Black coffee, nothing in it. Blood sugar spike, right? Yeah. So I want that to land because I live in, you know, the Pacific Northwest, the land of Starbucks. It's very difficult for people to really wrap their heads around this.
So true. Yeah. Yes. And I'm a coffee lover. I love coffee. Mm-hmm. So finding out too when you can drink it, you know, and if you can drink it, when your adrenals are burnt out, you can't drink it.
No. And my stance is also when you have an autoimmune flare, no, you know, it's causing acidity. And the more acidic you are, the more likely you are to have that autoimmune flare. So it's important. Yeah.
You know, with that acidity comment, you know, a big thing that helped me, that continues to help me, I've been doing this now for a long time, but I teach my clients to do this, is just check urine pH. Just check urine pH because that's going to tell you what's working for you and what's working against you. It is a biomarker like none other, right? It is as important as your heart rate, your blood pressure, you know, it is as important as your weight on your scale. This urine pH tells us so much, because it doesn't only tell us what's our, you know, like how are we in balance and homeostasis in our body, but our, how well are we managing stress, perceived and real stress. That's a big factor. Now, the urine pH will fluctuate, but getting it to that steady alkaline state is game changing. I've had tens of thousands of women doing my programs now. And that is something they say all the time. It just helps so much identify what they can do and what they can't do.
So where do you want people to keep their urine pH?
Above seven. It's like, as long as it's green, you know, I'm happy. Let's get it 7.5. Woohoo. I'm thrilled. Mm-hmm. You know, let's just get it a slightly alkaline. So 7.5 is great. Just above seven.
And what are the expected outcomes from that?
Well, number one, you feel more at home in your body. You feel more grounded. It's pretty amazing. And if you think about it, think acidity, inflammation, alkalinity is the opposite, right? They think of acidity like a city, like New York City, industrial, smoke, smog, very little green space, versus alkalinity like the Amazon jungle. You know, peaceful, serene, well, unless there's an anaconda, but let's not go there. That will be stressful. But, you know, just think of the beautiful forest or beach walk or something like that. That is the essence of alkalinity. And that's very grounding, very stabilizing. What we know from scientific research is that the more alkaline our urine pH is, the less at risk we are for metabolic syndrome. So diabetes, hypertension, metabolic diseases and cardiovascular disease, as well as inflammatory diseases like cancer and osteoporosis.
Yeah. All right. Is there anything I haven't asked you that you want our watchers to know?
Well, I just think it's really big for our listeners, especially thinking of autoimmune and the brain. It's balancing our hormones, supporting our adrenal glands, and getting into this keto alkaline state. Feel what that feels like. It's so empowering, and it's so nourishing to our bodies, and it gives you another lease on life. It did for me. It has for me.
Yeah. I wrote the Quick and Easy Autoimmune Paleo Cookbook, and you know, in that it's basically keto, right? You're not, and it just changed everything, because if I just eat from that book, I'm good. Right. And it's the same with yours. If you just eat from that book, people will say, I don't know what to eat. You know, what can I eat? I'm just like, use the templates of these books that have been written for this. Just eat from that template and you're good. You know, just don't deviate from it. And then you're not doing this roller coaster thing, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I think there's one more thing I'd add, Keisha, is that, you know, oxytocin, the hormone of love, bonding, and connection, it's a powerful anti-inflammatory hormone, anti-aging hormone. It's just this powerful hormone. And when we're under stress, and especially when our body is trying to fight itself off, we get into this, you know, state where oxytocin is low, and we can feel isolated and disconnected and challenged and desolate, you know, that we feel hopeless. And that's that feeling, like, I just feel hopeless. There's nothing I can do. That's often physiologic. So as we work to balance our physiology and restore our physiology, we will feel empowered to make those next right steps. And the behaviors that we incorporate, you know, laughter, playing, going for a walk in nature, meditating. I mean, this is hard science. This is good stuff, right? That empowers our physiology to be able to feel like, oh yeah, I can take the next right step. I mean, willpower is physiologic. So I want people to know that as they start in their journey, as they work to heal their autoimmunity, it is also, you know, that whole concept of doing things that, you know, bring you joy and pleasure and laughter.
Laughter is so important. Thank you, Dr. Anna. And I'll let you get back to your silent retreat. Appreciate you spending time to share even a little bit of your wisdom with us.
A pleasure to be here. Thank you all.
All right, everybody. Until next time, be well.